من يوم ترارات في الدنيا وانا لاجي.
This is Artbeat Africa, a weekly roundup of inspiring voices from the world of music and culture from the Focus on Africa team. Welcome. That majestic voice belongs to Aziza Brahim, and we'll be hearing her story and songs in a bit. But for now, let's talk about the floor rock, the freeze and the kick out. Those are all breakdancing moves that are likely to be familiar with our first act. They're known as Say It Through Breakdance, a project made up of some B-boys and B-girls from Algeria, Tunisia, Libya and Morocco. They use their eye-popping and body-popping moves as an alternative to getting involved in drugs. It's also a way for the dancers to express themselves as their region undergoes major social, political and economic change. Focus on Africa's Jenny Horrocks met some of them in rehearsal.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more. 10, 9, 8, 7. My name is Ibrikatne Rashid. I'm from Agadir City, Morocco, and started dancing now since 2000, I think. It was hard in the beginning, but...
Why?
It's a long story. So, I started in the street with the guys from my hood, and I have some troubles with my mom. She said, what you doing this, why and that, and she have a bad ideas about hip-hop.
She was worried about you?
Yeah, sure. She's a mom. One time, she's coming to the place where we're practicing, and she look at me in the eyes, and then she takes some rocks, and she put it on me, and she said, go. Oh.
She started throwing stones at you?
Yeah. And she said, go, I told you, don't do this.
How embarrassing.
Yeah, in front of my friends. That's a shame. But I understand why she did. But after that, she had a conversation with a friend of hers. She said, no, hip-hop is not that what you think. She started to understand and she support me a lot.
So now they're warming up, running around in a circle on the stage. When he shouts, they jump in the air. They touch the ground. There's quite a nice atmosphere between them all. All very important warming up for when they start dancing proper.
You have to do a lot of things to have a good shape to dance, because breaking, there's artistic side. You have to be original, find your moves and all those stuff, your flow with music and that. And sportive side. Sportive side is more aggressive, and that you have to have a good shape.
My name is Shuaib. I'm a b-boy. I've started more than 10 years ago, and now I'm managing Art Solution Association. It's one of the most popular structures working on the hip-hop culture in Tunisia and North Africa. I'm in the third generation of b-boys in Tunisia. So b-boying was in Tunisia like a long time ago, 10 years ago or 20 years ago. The state or even the people, they don't accept this new culture. No one really was focusing on this energy coming from the streets, coming from the youth. I was practicing on the street on my hood, but I was not able to do it at the main street in Tunis, because no one can do anything, not only the b-boys. Musician, politician, I don't know, journalist, photograph. Now it's changing a lot, but not enough, because you want something better.
So in Tunisia, people have some way to go to embrace the hip-hop culture fully. And Rashid from Morocco told me the breakdance scene there used to be very strong until the government decided to incorporate their competitions to bring them under the umbrella of the Fitness Federation as a way of being in control of it. This, he says, has curtailed the feeling of freedom and therefore the appeal the competitions have in the country. Meanwhile, the b-boys of North Africa get out and travel to competitions abroad as much as they can. But all that costs money, and as Shuaib from Tunisia explains, the b-boys sacrifice a lot in order to do what they love.
B-boy, it means like no money, no honey, no car, nothing. This culture brings us all together. we can express ourselves, we can love each other, we can live the culture and live the moment.
That was Shuaib, a Tunisian breakdancer, also known as a b-boy, ending that report. Now to a woman whose roots are in the disputed territory of Western Sahara, but whose life has taken her from the refugee camps of southwest Algeria to music school in Cuba and on to Barcelona, where she now lives. Her name is Aziza Brahim, and her voice is something else. Her fourth album, Soutak, which means your voice, was released earlier this year to high acclaim. She's the second artist in our new 8-part Africa Beat series, which seeks out the most innovative and interesting up-and-coming musicians from the continent. And she's certainly one of those things.
La canción de Laji trata sobre...
The song Laji talks about the problem of refugees, all the refugee people from Palestine, Western Sahara, Mali. I was born in exile and lived my life in refugee camps. I think music is the most powerful weapon. If I can give publicity to my conflict, it's a duty and a satisfaction. The conflict of Western Sahara is my conflict because it's my country. I live in Barcelona at the moment, but my family are in the camps. My people have been suffering all kinds of calamities for 40 years. Sahrawi music comes from our Arab roots and our African roots. Our culture has always been handed on orally, and music is very important for us because this is our way to take care of our cultural legacy, as our culture is not written down. For me, music has always been part of my natural habitat. My grandmother is a very important poet in my homeland and always gave us a love for music and poetry. And since I was small, I have made music. And for me, it's a way of freeing myself because music makes me feel good and allows me to express what I'm feeling inside. And most of all, because of that notion we Sahrawis have, that we can only survive and not really live. So music helps me keep all of that in perspective.
La música por lo menos me ayuda a compaginar todas esas cuestiones.
Aziza Brahim and her song Lagi, recorded especially for the BBC's Africa Beats series. And you can see a video of that performance on the BBC Africa YouTube page. This is Artbeat Africa, and I'm Kim Chakaneta. Now, many of you would recognise the line, "Please, sir, can I have some more?" It's from the English classic Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens. But now that classic has been given a fresh Afrobeat twist by the director Yinka Ayende. For two nights, audiences at London's Hackney Empire watched the world's first Afrobeat musical. Rita Ray had a word with the director of Oliver Twist, that's T-W-E-E-S-T.
My name is Yinka Ayinde, and I am the producer, creator and director of Oliver Twist, the Afrobeats musical. We're celebrating the influence of African culture in London specifically. So there's African fashion designers in the UK. There's new music producers in the UK. We have people like Mr. Silva and Fuse ODG who are going really, really well right now. And they're all from London and they're doing Afrobeats music. So we're just celebrating the influence of Africa in London. We haven't always had that. When we were younger, we had to pretend to be Caribbean, otherwise we'd be laughed at. But now there's a real celebration of African spirit in London. So we're just putting it out in a lighthearted way, in a comedic way as well.
So what is the storyline? And did you write it?
Okay, so I didn't write it. I created the story and I contacted a writer called Nana Duncan. She's Ghanaian and she's from Hackney. She's really, really young and very, very talented. So the story is basically about a guy called Toby. He's from London, and he's got a Nigerian background. He's really into the girls and he gets loads of girls. He gets any girl that he wants. But then one day he meets a girl called Trisha, who sings at his favourite club, which he lives upstairs with his mum. So Trisha performs at this club. He sees her, really, really likes her, thinks he's going to get her, but she takes no interest to him. So through trying different angles and so many attempts to get her attention, he discovers her life into more detail, and it just goes into what her ambitions are, her family values and life values. And it's a very it's an inspirational musical at the end. But in the run-up to it, it's just very funny, comedic. His mum is absolutely hilarious, and we just have loads of like nice African family scenes and great music.
Why is it called Oliver Twist instead of Oliver Twist?
It's called Oliver Twist because it's meant to be, you know, the fusion of British and African culture. So we've taken a well-known British title and given it an African spin, which is what the whole musical is about.
Director Yinka Ayende is hoping to take the show on the road here in the UK. Nairobi is a city full of art, and much of the city is an actual canvas. Murals and graffiti spring up on street corners and sideways. When politicians put up campaign billboards, for instance, graffiti artists spray their own comments, creating a running political commentary that doesn't always please those being criticised. Our reporter, Frenny Joey, has been speaking to some of Nairobi's leading graffiti artists.
Driving on the streets of Nairobi, it's common to see murals or graffiti showing different messages, like politicians being urged to be better leaders or youth being urged not to abuse drugs. So I'm just going up to catch up with some of the graffiti artists at their studio where they engineer all the art before bringing it out on the streets.
Yeah, my name is Frank Slave and I've been doing graffiti for 13 years now. I recognize it's a good art form. People are giving it an audience. So it was there in the Egyptian time and people try to bring it down. It still find its way back.
This piece of graffiti here really captured my attention.
Yes.
Because I can see it talking about ballot revolution.
Yes. So this piece is a collective piece. We did it, all of us. It was a piece that we were doing with the Chief Justice. We wanted to give him as a gift. It was about change, and you can see the vulture over there. We are trying to like push out the vulture. The vulture is like the SI unit of a parliamentary representative who's there just misusing funds of the people and leaving them without any development. So this vulture is being pushed away by the citizens of the city.
My name is Kerosh.
Kerosh, are you one of the artists who took part in this?
Yes, I was part of this painting, yeah.
Do you feel the message it's passing, it's going to the right people?
It went to the right people, and they had their opinion, their views about it, which was not very positive. That's why after some time they wiped off all the pieces we did in the streets.
Swift 9, one of the experts in spring street graffiti, is going to show me how they do it.
I write Swift 9. And I've been painting graffiti for 10 years now.
What I have here in my hand is a can of diamond spray paint, and I think this is one of the best spray paint that we can find locally. It goes for around 300 shillings.
It's about $4.
Yeah, almost $4. Yeah. One can, if you're out there painting illegally, you can do one throw up with one can.
One throw up means?
One throw up means that. Well, a throw up is sort of like your signature, but it's more elaborate.
So you can show me. Let's see.
Well, this is a tag which is considered as a signature. And well, the signature or the tag is like the lowest type of graffiti. So you can compare it to like the scrolling and the tagging that is considered as unpleasant to the eye.
So you spend quite an amount of money and time to do a mural. Do you earn profit?
Yeah, you can make a living out of doing graffiti, but you need to also do something else on the side, you know, like get commissioned jobs, because if you're just painting out illegally, you need to get like a proper supply of paints. In case you're doing something illegal, you can have some money just to buy some paints, because I think in Nairobi it's really hard to steal paint, because well, graffiti wise you're supposed to steal the paint, but here in Nairobi if you steal the paint, then that's the end of you.
From the way you're talking, it looks like graffiti artists are criminals. You're stealing paint.
No, we're not stealing, you're taking. Just polite taking and leaving it beautiful, you know. We're not taking it for ourselves, you're taking it and giving it to the world, you know, just so that the world can enjoy it. Yeah, we were actually creating this awareness and trying to teach the voter, like it's their responsibility to vote in the right candidate, you know. You're not supposed to sell your vote just because for the money, and at the end of the day you end up electing someone who's irresponsible.
What happens when you paint, when you do murals on walls that don't belong to you? Do you take the responsibility to clean the wall thereafter?
I don't think I'm supposed to clean the wall, because if I do a mural, I believe that it's that wall is appropriate for the mural. I don't think I'm supposed to paint it over after I finish up.
Are there cases where you have done a mural on a wall whose owner has not given you their consent?
Yeah, we always do that every time.
That's illegal.
I know it's illegal, but I believe that it's much easier to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission, because they can do whatever they want to, but I have to put it out there.
So back on the streets, like here at Kenyatta Avenue, the graffiti is evident. At the bus stops, walls, road surfaces, most of it is social commentary on drug abuse, politics, and the need for a just society. Nairobi buses are also a popular canvas for the graffiti, displaying hip-hop culture, local celebrities, and American pop culture. This lot of talented painters tell me that this is their expression of art that speaks to the heart.
That report from Kenya brings us to the end of our program this week. Do join us again next week for more cultural treats from across the continent. If you can't wait, you can find arts and cultural stories throughout the week on our Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus pages. Our username is BBC Africa. I'm Kim Chakanetsa. Now let Aziza Brahim play us out.